All right, brilliant. Well, welcome to the Resound Worship Songwriting Podcast, Jonas Kjellberg.
Oh, hello. I was supposed to respond to that. Okay, well, hello.
Hello, yes, brilliant. Jonas, in addition to being married to Nina, who is one of our incredible team of trustees at the Song and Hymn Writers Foundation, you are something of an expert in digital theology. Would you like to just introduce yourself a little more and tell us what on earth digital theology is?
Sure. So I currently work at Spurgeon's College, where I am the director of postgraduate studies. And I also run and teach an MA program in digital theology. So as you've already said, my main research interest is what we call digital theology, and I'll explain what that means, but maybe just a little bit more about myself. So I'm originally from Sweden, but I've moved around quite a bit. So I kind of think of my life in if you were to divide it into thirds, I'd be a third living in Sweden, a third living in UK, and third elsewhere. And as you said, I'm married to Nina, and she's also in Durham, where you live. Well, working in Durham now at the Department for Theology and Religion, doing a postdoc there, which is kind of strange because we moved to London from Durham 3 years ago and did not anticipate that move happening. So life is full of surprises. Yeah.
And train journeys.
Yes, but it's not too bad. I quite like train journeys as well. And people think that Durham is further away than it really is.
Yes, come on. Come visit us in Durham, people.
Yeah, it's only is it 2 hours 45 now from King's Cross, I think?
Thereabouts, isn't it? Yeah.
It's pretty good. So, what was your second question? I think there's two questions in one.
Yeah, so give us a little bit, fill out the picture of what digital theology encompasses.
Sure. So I suppose digital theology is any theological reflection on digital technology, but more broadly, digital culture. So I tend to think of it in kind of three general kind of areas that we were interested in and I'm interested in. One has to do with a kind of a practical theology. So what happens when churches, individuals, and religious communities use this technology? How does it impact their practice? And how should we then think theologically about those changes that occur in the use of that technology? So a few examples. One would be, you know, how does it change the way we might do missions or evangelism? What are some of the considerations that we need to make when we use these tools for those purposes? Or a good example would be, what happens when we read the Bible through a screen? Does that change the way that we engage with the Bible, even interpret the Bible, our relationship with the Bible? You know, especially evangelicals tend to have a special relationship with their Bible that they've been carrying with them and underlined, they've lived with it for decades and decades. You know, how does that translate into a digital Bible? And what are the implications of that? There's tons of different questions that can be explored that way. But I think what's really important to recognize, I think, is that technology is not just tools, but they are also environments in which we live and act and relate and think and pray. And so all these things are implicated by technological environments. That means that we can then talk about technological culture. And so what I'm interested in is, how does digital technology tie up with general cultural movements and shift and changes, and which then invites a different kind of theological reflection? So for those who've studied theology, you're probably familiar with the term contextual theology, which basically means that theology is and should be shaped by the cultural context in which it's articulated and created and disseminated. And so what does it mean to do theology in a digital culture, and what kind of interesting questions does that lead to in terms of, you know, our doctrine of creation, for example? What does it mean to be created in the image of God who creates things, and what does that mean for how we understand technology, and how does our notion of creativity and divine creativity change within the digital culture? So those are more kind of abstracted questions, but I think they're very interesting. And I mean, creativity is a good example, because I'm sure we'll get into those kind of topics later on. So those are two areas, and the third area is just ethics. Right? So Christians have always been involved with thinking about what ethics and wider implications for society. So, for example, one question that we might want to explore is the digital divide. You know, who's left behind, and what should be thinking about that? What's the theology? What does our theology say about that? Or, you know, we are living in surveillance societies. London is one of the most surveyed cities in the world, like top 10. You know, is there a Christian voice there around surveillance and so forth? So those are just very briefly some pointers. I hope that's sufficient. Maybe it was too much.
Amazing. Yeah, already my mind is racing in so many different directions. If anyone wants to engage more broadly in, well, obviously get into speaking about songwriting in a moment and AI, but if anyone wants to engage more broadly, where would be some beginner points of access to the issues you're raising there? Because I'm sure there will be people listening who are whose imaginations are fired by what you've said.
Well, I mean, it depends on what level you want to be engaged. But so one of the things I do is I chair a global network for digital theology, which is more of an academic kind of forum for these kind of questions. And, you know, we do have a YouTube channel, Global Network for Digital Theology. Lots of videos there. Papers that people have been given, that might be a good resource.
Oh, great. Yeah.
For a more popular kind of writing, I've done a fair bit with the Lausanne movement. And so if you have a look at some of the content and articles I've written there, that those are more, they provide a little bit more of a general introduction to how we should think theologically about.
Amazing. Okay. That's brilliant. I think we'll try and get those linked in the show notes where show notes appear.
All right.
Well, you are just the man to help us with this month's 12 song challenge in that case, because we are looking at using AI in our songwriting workflow over the month of November, which I think is going to excite some people. Some people are already there. And for others, that's can be a very intimidating or kind of even off-putting challenge. I think it'd be quite useful if you'd be happy just to give a little bit of background about where are we at with AI and what are the kind of touch points between trends in AI and what's happening in the church.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we all recognize the big advances that have been made in AI in the last few years. But I think a good starting point for this conversation is to recognize that it's been around for decades and decades. One of the truisms within the tech industry is that AI today becomes software tomorrow. So, for example, few of us think of using Microsoft Word as using AI. But even the spelling and the grammar automated, what's it called, autocorrect, you know, that's AI. You know, we use Google search all the time. We've done that for decades. That's AI. You know, we can go on and on about how AI is already embedded in so much digital technology. So I think the reason why so much attention has been given to AI in the last few years is just the speed of the development. So I think we recognize that a key moment is ChatGPT 3, it was in 2022. I had actually used earlier versions of that, ChatGPT 2, in talks generating sentences here and there, just to illustrate what's going to happen, right? But it was quite clunky. There was also a friend of mine, he has a website called worship.ai, and he's had that for ages. And again, it was, you could generate different songs and different styles.
Is that John Dyer?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. John was in Durham as well.
Yes, that's true. So you've interacted. Have you seen that website?
I have, yeah. So it was several years ago, wasn't it, that he put that up. And I can remember whenever that was, a few years back, looking at that and thinking, oh, we have nothing to fear as worship songwriters, because, you know, it was very much a kind of novelty thing. And then I think the sort of light bulb turning on, or, you know, either in inspiration or in terror for me, was at the end of 2022, when suddenly there was a trend on Twitter, actually was where I first saw it. People were generating, I think the first viral one was a hymn about ducks. The ducks of the Lord went around on a tweet in November or December 2022. And, you know, it was absolutely hilarious. And it spawned a trend of people doing all kinds of other novelty hymns. But as I read these texts, I was just astonished, actually, by the consistency and quality of the writing, you know, and the thing, I wrote an article, a blog post at the time, kind of commenting that actually what ChatGPT was producing was better than many of my first draft texts in terms of, you know, consistent rhyme scheme and, you know, a sort of a real, really strong kind of thematic center, which, you know, may some say more about my talent as a songwriter, I'm not sure, but you know, as people started using this and producing more, I spent the Christmas holidays in 2022 just astonished at my laptop, getting it to generate all kinds of different hymn texts, and really feeling quite sobered about how good many of them were.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that 2022 is going to be a key year, which we will look back on as a key year. And I think we recognize that this is something very powerful, that we generative AI is producing something that seems fairly similar to what humans can produce. Mm. And does that much faster, sometimes better, sometimes worse. But a reason why it's causing such stir is because of it just has such potential to reshape our societies, right? And so and because the potential and the power is because of the power of this technology, we also oscillate between dystopian and utopian, right? So, you know, we have these very strong views, and media is playing its part in this. You know, this is the end of humanity. This is the beginning of a new era. You know, everything is going to be fine, and we're going to live forever, and, you know, all sin will be washed away, and, you know, we will live in perfect societies. And I think those kind of headlines then play into comes into the conversation when we then start thinking about more practically, well, what does that actually then mean? And I think that it's important to recognize that we have personal dispositions, let's call it emotive instincts, when we come to technology. So for some, we're instinctively suspicious of any new technological innovation. For others, we're just like, can't wait for the next thing and try it out. So I think sometimes it's just helpful to recognize that within yourself to begin with, that we don't come neutrally to new technology, but we already have a kind of an emotive reaction to technology that's been shaped by history and personalities and these kind of things. I think that AI, where it's at the moment, is that things are a little bit maybe slowing down slightly in terms of, at least the optimism or pessimism is being tempered. And now we're like, oh, this is really cool stuff, but actually a lot of it's just gimmicky.
Yeah, I've certainly found that. You know, when that first kind of week of using ChatGPT to generate hymns, I genuinely felt, if this is what it can do now, then, you know, imagine a year or 2 years or 3 years. I found myself really wondering whether I would be sort of out of a job or out of a vocation in terms of writing the best quality stuff. But it is interesting that after you sort of, I found this with Midjourney, the AI image generator as well. After the first sort of amazement of what it can do, you actually begin to see, oh, there are definitely patterns that it falls into. ChatGPT generates a specific kind of text, and what it generates is often pretty good, but it, you know, there's very limited variation, and I think that's true about the kinds of images that Midjourney tends to create. You know, they definitely, you can spot them, can't you? Like you can sort of look at an AI generated image and you have a gut feel, oh, I think that's probably AI.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, so even in an educational context, you know, we do have software that detects whether text has been AI generated.
Oh yeah. Oh goodness. Yes.
But I think already now, as tutors and lecturers, we are starting to recognize when a text is written by AI, uh-huh, because it has a certain way of writing. Yeah. And I mean, even 2 years ago, I would have said, if you were to produce an AI generated essay, you probably would have got a mark for a bachelor degree. You would probably get a mark in the high 50s, early 60s.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the kind of, I mean, it's coherent. It's grammatically correct. It probably will engage with some key ideas, but it's going to lack in that kind of critical analysis that we often look for. So, I mean, that's just an example of the kind of the limitations currently. But I'm reading more generally in the tech industry, everyone's been pouring money into this. And at the moment, it's a bit like, okay, yeah, how do we make money? You know, how do we turn this into something useful? One example, I was at an event organized by the Barber Society last week, and I was around the table where we were talking about how can we use AI to encourage Bible engagement. Right.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways that AI is being used is to interpret the Bible, right? So there are lots of Bible apps where you can go and you can type in a question. What does the Bible say about, I don't know, camels? That was a bad example, actually.
I love it.
And it'll tell you what the Bible says about camels. But when it comes to more controversial issues or contentious issues, you know, obviously it will generate a text, and it will depend on what data has been the AI has been trained on.
So tell us a little bit more about that. Like, how does, you know, some people will not have looked at all into, like, how does ChatGPT generate any text? Where do these ideas come from?
Yeah, I mean, it's well, to begin with, I mean, AI is just statistical, using data to create statistical inferences. So it's using existing data already, and it trains itself on that. What data AI has, AI applications have access to, has a huge bearing on what it will produce.
Mm-hmm. So they feed in tons and tons of information from who knows where.
Yeah. So, and that's a huge problem at the moment, is that most of the time there's no transparency around what data has been used and what has been trained around. But you can, obviously you can limit, you can decide what you're going to train the application on, right? So when it comes to Christian uses of AI, especially in the context of, say, for example, interpreting the Bible, a lot of time it will be trained on the commentaries or things like that.
Okay.
But that in itself obviously creates questions around biases.
Right.
This is one of the biggest problems with AI, right? because the output will only be as good as what the input is, right?
Yes, okay.
And so the same issues that you will have with and on any commentary is that we actually, when it comes to interpreting the Bible, it's difficult, and we disagree, and we pore over the same text, and we come to different conclusions. So, and so my question when it comes to especially Bible AI applications, well, A, there's one bias. Well, we at least if I'm reading John Golden Gay's commentary on XYZ, I know where he's kind of roughly coming from, and
right.
And but this we have no insight into. Why has it reached this conclusion and not another conclusion? That's one issue.
Yes.
But then my question: if you want people to engage with the Bible and interpreting the Bible, does AI do that any better than a commentary like some a Bible scholar would have done? So what do we actually gain from doing that? If you want people to engage with the Bible, you can have a search function and you can say, what are some views on, women and leadership, which would be controversial. And then you could generate text written by people. Not sure what we gain from having a text written by AI in this case. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So AI is not actually producing original thoughts. It's sort of statistically guessing what the most likely kind of words and ideas are in response to the query.
Yeah, I'm a bit undecided on that. Yeah, because, you know, what is any human creativity, right? It doesn't happen out of nothing. There's always this material that we use in different ways. And that's very true for music, right?
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say that begins to segue us towards specifically how AI comes to bear on the songwriting task, because there's a big court case going on at the moment with Suno, the music AI generator, which, again, a few months ago, a number of us were playing around in the 12 Song Challenge Facebook group, coming up, you know, getting Suno to write songs about different things. We play around with that a lot in my family. And again, another moment like that December 2022 ChatGPT moment, where I just could not believe how good these things were. But there's a big court case at the moment because Suno has been trained on tons and tons of copyrighted commercial music. And so all the record companies are saying, hold on a sec, you know, that means that the sort of raw material that it's producing sounds from is actually uncredited copyrighted work, and well, you know, what are the ethics of that? But I'm sure they're more interested in what are the economics of that, like who should we be paid, should that be allowed to happen? And I think one of the things that I find fascinating about that is, of course, that's how any of us as songwriters have trained our sort of skills and abilities as songwriters, by listening to what tons and tons of other people have produced. So it does raise the question for me, like, what in some ways, what is the difference, like, and if there isn't much difference, like why is that not a problem for me to sort of train my creativity on lots of other people's works, whereas it then is a problem? I suppose it's the kind of commercialized aspect, is it?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think that you're absolutely right in terms of, and I think that's partly why I find studying the digital and technology fascinating, that is sometimes it creates a mirror that we're forced to ask questions about practices that we take for granted already, right? So I think this is a really good example. You know, it highlights how problematic copyright is to begin with. So I'm not, this is not my area at all.
I spend my life juggling this. So
far into copyright issues. But I think, yeah, it's really interesting that, you know, actually when we start thinking about it, well, what is, you know, all creative processes, no creative process comes out of a vacuum.
Yeah.
Right. You're always implicitly or implicitly drawing upon what's gone before you and what's around you.
Yes, the kind of the great artist's steal quote that often gets put around, you know, and it's the truth, isn't it? And I think one of the things that I found really challenging myself looking at the ChatGPT lyrics and listening to the Suno audio that's generated is thinking exactly this thought. Am I being sort of lazy? You know, if we're viewing those, you know, after a bit of time, you can hear these sort of repeated patterns and motifs, both in the lyrics and in the music. But am I any less kind of generic and repetitive? Like, am I sort of challenging myself to, you know, to not just write the filler line that fits because of the rhyme, which is sort of in some way feels like a weakness of ChatGPT, but actually, you know, so many of the works that I produce and us in the community, we write, you know, we're kind of doing the same thing. And if we don't think AI should do it, it points the finger at us. Perhaps we should raise our own game creatively.
Yes, I think those are some really good questions.
So an example that we recently looked at in the community, I found this AI produced Justin Bieber worship song on YouTube. This guy, I guess, and if you look at his YouTube channel, it's all kinds of different. He just produces AI songs, you know, in the voice of all kinds of different artists and in the style of all kinds of different artists. And so he's done this one, which is an AI worship song, you know, with he's edited together a video of Justin Bieber, you know, in kind of all different scenes in his life. And then the lyrics are ChatGPT generated. As far as I understand, the music is generated by AI. And then he's using a voice synthesizer to sound like Justin Bieber as well. And, you know, and what you end up with in terms of a track is this kind of very generic sounding kind of pop, you know, pop worship kind of a thing, which, you know, that's one thing. The thing that the thing that blew me away about this one is that in 1 month, this track has more than 6 million YouTube views. And if you look at the comments on the YouTube thread, tons of it is people who are, even though he says in the description, this is a, you know, it's an AI sort of produced work, and it's not intended to be presented as a original Justin Bieber song, although actually in all kinds of different ways he is presenting it as if it, you know, like he's certainly trying to trick the algorithm into promoting it as if it was a Justin Bieber song. But if you look in the comment thread, and this is the thing that I find really sort of challenging as a songwriter, because we're always kind of thinking about how do we promote our songs and, you know, what kind of response are our songs receiving. And honestly, the results of this track, you know, in that digital space, like on that platform on YouTube, are a songwriter's dream, a worship songwriter's dream, you know, 6 million plus plays in a month, and then tons and tons of comments from people kind of giving testimonies of how much it's moved them and it's encouraged them in their faith, you know. You know, some obviously conscious that it's AI, but lots of them apparently not. And nevertheless, it's kind of feeding into their devotional lives in ways that sort of certainly appear to be edifying. And if that was my song receiving that response, I'd be absolutely delighted. And I find that so incredibly challenging because it kind of begs the question about what are the kind of measures of success? And actually, you know, when I put a song, you know, I recently put up a song and it got maybe 300 plays in, you know, in a couple of weeks. And, you know, but then a few of my friends have told me in really specific terms how much that song has meant to them, and trying to figure out, like, this seems to be another frontier of this is the way AI is kind of intersecting with just social media more generally and media culture more generally. What are the kind of metrics of feedback and how are we measuring whether something is worth having done? I don't know whether you have anything to bounce off that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many questions here, right? There's questions around, yeah. You know, how does it matter if it's AI generated, if it's moving people towards worship or an encounter with the divine? Doesn't matter then. So that's a kind of utilitarian argument, right? You know, the means justifies the ends kind of scenario. There is questions about kind of the wider, I guess, worship industry. There is an industry, and there's very few songs that are actually sung in our churches because of that. Yeah. I mean, wider influence of that. I think that when I've in kind of seminar settings been asking people, you know, I regularly kind of use AI live illustrations just of how AI can generate worship songs and so forth. And people tend to be more pessimistic or negative about it, especially people who are themselves clergy.
Right.
Or, you know, ministry, in church ministry. They tend to be much more negative towards it. An example that's not quite the same but similar is there was an exhibition in Wittenberg in 2017, and they had a Bless You Too robot that was very clunky. It looked like an ATM almost, but it had this hand,
right.
And you could get a blessing from this robot.
Oh wow!
And there is some functions you could get a male or female voice or something.
Oh my goodness!
But some friends of mine in Germany, they did some research on it, and so they got people to fill in a questionnaire. Now this was an exhibition that was to celebrate 500 years of Reformation.
Oh right!
And
yeah,
so
okay.
There was lots of people there, and I'm sure people of all sorts of faiths, you know, right? But the majority of people were positive towards it, you know. Someone
as an experience, so being blessed by the robot was something that was edifying.
Yeah, so you know, maybe it was just the novelty of it as well. But, it was kind of the written responses showed a bit like. It chose a blessing just for me, that kind of thing. Or, you know, we haven't had a priest in our church for a while now, and it's so good to get a blessing, from somewhere. It's better than nothing, kind of thing. So
is that sort of, people are having the sense that God is working through the technology?
I think so. And I mean, to some extent, I think it goes against a little bit those of us who have grown up in a more kind of evangelical context to think of technology and kind of sacredness of material objects.
Mm.
But in church history, that's always been the case, where there's a recognition that material objects matter when we worship.
Mm.
So a good example of that would just be, you know, church buildings, which are media technologies,
right?
They communicate something about God, and they draw us into that. But even in evangelical context, we have it, even though we don't use that kind of language. Music instruments are used to draw the worshipper towards God, right? Or, you know, we talked about earlier, or we've almost sacralized our Bibles. You know, we treat them as holy objects. Right. And I think that's fine to acknowledge that materiality matters when we worship. That's part of our embodiment. One of my favorite examples is how we experience the divine or God differently depending on different technological environments. So worshiping God in a cathedral, we experience God as grand and as maybe a bit absent, but, you know, we experience the greatness of God in that that technological environment. Whereas if we worship in a home, God tends to seem a little bit more intimate, a bit closer to us. Right.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, technology has always been part of that. And we can even look to the Bible where God speaks through all sorts of objects. Material objects. So I don't think we can rule out that God could speak through AI as well. But there are other questions that we still need to explore.
Yeah. So, So as we sort of come to the challenge this month, each of us, like, give us some thoughts on, like, what's a helpful way for us to think about the role that AI can play in our task of songwriting in the month ahead? How should we think about what the role of AI is in the creative task?
Yeah, so I think as I said at the beginning, you know, we need to acknowledge that you probably have used AI in your songwriting process already, right? So principally, I think we probably were okay with that. Otherwise, we might not have done it that way. If you, for example, used a word processing application to write down lyrics, you have used AI to some extent. Mm. Maybe it doesn't have very much impact on what you've written, but it was there. I don't know so much about the process of recording, but I think that AI has probably been used quite a lot in the software.
Yes, certainly. Plenty of people auto-tune their demo vocals, which is absolutely a kind of AI.
Yeah, so then if we can admit that, then at least we need to start thinking about degree of use, right?
Okay, yeah.
You know, so I think we're probably most okay with that kind of level of use.
So those would be kind of AI as a tool. That's the...
Yeah, you know, that... AI as a tool. I think we are, on principle, I think most of us are okay with some level of use. So yeah. I guess the conversation... I think needs to be around limits, but also I think there are wider questions around, I guess what it does to us.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's where you want to go or which direction you want to take this at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that certainly is a question that I have in mind. Like, cause I, you know, in my own practice, I've, and these, here's a scatter of practical thoughts that people might want to think about for approaching the task. So I quite often will, when I've got a specific thing that I'm writing a song to, I will, as part of my just initial ideas gathering, I'll, you know, get ChatGPT to generate a text on that theme, and I'll kind of have a look in there and just see whether there's anything that it's worth picking up, or, you know, exactly as you say, because AI is so brilliant at summarizing kind of, oh, here's the kinds of things that the Bible has to say about this subject, and so therefore using it as a kind of research tool to kind of fuel my lyric writing. Another thing that I've done and found kind of interesting is when I've got a draft of a lyric, putting that text into ChatGPT and having it comment on, you know, how it would improve it, or, you know, that those kinds of things. And actually AI can be, you know, quite insightful as a means of getting feedback, particularly on the sort of technical aspects of language, of use of language. And it'll point out, specific things where that could be improved in the things that it's good at, like consistency of language and consistency of grammar and rhyme scheme and that kind of thing. I quite often use ChatGPT instead now of a rhyming dictionary. I'll just type into it and look, you know, the context of the line and say, you know, can you suggest some rhymes, you know, that might work. Mostly the lines it actually suggests are bad lines, but sometimes there's something in that sparks something. I haven't done this before, but another thing that I'm thinking about for this challenge is using Suno or one of the other music generators. I suppose actually if because we have some writers in the community who only write lyrics and don't write music, and so actually Suno has a function where you can upload a set of lyrics and it'll write music to it. That would be quite an interesting exercise. Another thing that Suno can do is generate a backing track, so it doesn't actually produce lyrics at all, but, you know, you tell it kind of what mood and what, you know, what style of music you want it to do, and it'll produce a backing track. And so one thing that I've thought about that I might do this month for the task is get it to do that and then see what comes out for me, singing over the top of it and writing a song over the top of it. Another thing already mentioned in relation to the Justin Bieber track is that another thing, lots of DAWs, digital audio workstations, there are plugins where you can generate AI musical parts, you know, so that might be another thing that some of our writers might consider doing this month is, you know, generating something with AI, you know, as part of the recording process. So, you know, there's a bunch of ways. And I suppose in every one of those instances, I'm kind of thinking about AI as being a sort of a tool in the songwriting process. So I suppose to sort of come towards coming into land together, like I guess I have two questions. One is like, are there ways in which we can helpfully think about AI as more than just a tool, like a spell checker, but, you know, doing more? And then secondly, you know, what should, are there any areas of the creative process that we think AI shouldn't participate in? Like, what, you know, as you asked, what are the limits? So I don't know if, so those two, what is there anything more? And then what are the limits?
Sadly, we lost the last 10 minutes of the interview, ironically, due to a technological glitch. So whilst we were tempted to generate the rest of it using AI, we couldn't get Jonas's voice quite right. So instead, Chris is going to recap the bits that we missed on the main pod. So if you check out episode 128, you can find out what happened.